Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Mr. Anthony Bongiorno. Anthony, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I'd like to take back my grade. I'm doing okay.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, there's nothing wrong with pleasantries. You know, I always say when you're like, how you doing? And someone's like, tells you the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, look, I know you. Everything sucks. I know that you're doing terrible.
And now you're unloading it on me.
Everyone's doing terrible. Just be like, just say I'm fine and move on with your life. Anyway. This is PCMC. That's what that stands for, is Pop Culture Man Children. And from what I hear is that the kids on the street, they call it PCMC. And
that's from the Gen Alphas.
Yeah, the Gen Alphas are like
Skibbity PCMC. Like
PCMC. It's
got Riz.
No cap. I just learned no cap.
Really?
The other day.
That's like an old one.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm very old. What can I tell you? I'm 3 years older than you, so it takes me three years to guess something that you've already known. You're learning things now that I'm gonna get in 3 years.
Oh boy. So, do you know the Riz?
It's charisma, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That one I know.
Okay.
That one I know. So this is a full episode. So we're going to have three segments. We're going to talk about pop culture, entertainment news. We're going to talk about some new trailers. We have a few doozies.
We sure do.
And then we're going to do the chill sesh, where we just talk about what we're currently watching, reading, whatever. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say reading, because I am in the deepest reading slump of my adult life.
Oh, really?
I have never... The last time I haven't read this long was when I was born. I am in such a reading slump.
When was the last time you finished a book?
A book? Book?
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now. I'll tell you right fucking now, because I got good reads. I'm not going to count comic books, because you could do that. That's one cheating. Sitting. It is cheating.
Honestly, it's not cheating.
It's not cheating, whatever. It's reading, but it's...
Of course.
Yeah. And also not counting poetry.
Okay.
The last book I read was A Mouse Divided, the book where I talked to the author on this here podcast.
Yeah, yeah, that was a minute ago.
I read Read Dangerously, The Subversive Power of Literature in Troubled Times. That was a good book. I just, you know.
When were those titles?
We're going back a couple months.
Okay, that's not terrible.
You know what it is, and I haven't finished saying what this show is, which is then we do current obsessions as the third segment. The problem with the reading slump, right? Is I think I have, as much as I love a bookstore and I love looking at books and buying books, I think I have to accept that I can only read on my Kindle now.
Oh, really?
I have a little nightlight that Jen makes fun of that, like, I clip on my book and I put it on.
Oh, that's cute. I was thinking about getting one of those. I used to have one.
But it's like, it makes the book heavy and weird.
Yeah, it's very, you're always doing a dance with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm really only comfortable reading on the Kindle.
Okay.
I'm currently in the middle of two books, and both are actual physical books. So it's like at nighttime, I'm like, I don't want to read them. And
yeah, I feel that way.
I'm in a bad spot.
Yeah,
I'm
reading a novel right now, a physical book novel, and it's taking me a really long time because I can't read it in bed. Because
right.
I'm also like older, like old and fat, and I just like don't feel. I'm not physically comfortable reading in bed anymore, unless it's on a Kindle.
Kindles would just make everything so much easier.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
A book is such an event.
You know, I'm a. I saw a meme that was like, voracious reader, non-practicing. That's me.
Yeah, yeah, that's me too.
I identify as a reader.
I'm just
part of my identity.
I gotta pull myself. I'm also in a slump because, and I've talked about this previously on the show, I'm in like a real movie watching era. And it happens to me like every 10 years or so, I'll get into a weird place where I'm like, I'm watching two movies a day.
That's cool. Because then you knock them out and you're like, I've seen it.
Right. And you get to see a lot of amazing things and stuff. And there's so many, you know, like if you know how to, if you're in charge of your consumption diet. The world that we live in now is actually amazing for finding things that you want and not watching bullshit.
Yeah.
So I'm always watching shit. But you know, I know that reading used to calm me in a sort of meditative way, and film doesn't do that.
Mm-mm. Film stirs me up.
Yeah, and reading...
But it's too calming. You read a paragraph and then you're asleep.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
When you're in a reading slump, do you just not... my reading slumps are always like, I've been reading this book for 6 months.
Yeah, I've been reading two books for like 6 months.
You're not overwhelmed by the amount of... I mean, I'm just over... I'm always overwhelmed by the amount of media that's just always right in my face.
Mm-hmm.
But like, sometimes I'll sit down and be like, I'm going to watch a, you know, I'm going to watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Netflix. Scroll, 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 scroll. Let's, what's on Hulu? Scroll, scroll, scroll. What's on Disney Plus? Scroll, scroll, scroll. And then like an hour has passed and I haven't picked anything. And then I just give up.
I think you get on a roll of, and sometimes I'm on a roll with this with books too, just picking up and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You might find a stinker once in a while,
mm-hmm.
but, I don't try to find like the best thing for right now.
Yeah. It's like the magic of just getting started. That self-help book where like you just read the title. Right.
I just go, or like with film, I'm so knowledgeable. Like it's rare that I come across a title that I haven't heard of or know the director or even know like the time period it comes from.
Stop bragging.
I can't help it. So, so it's a matter of, I, but even if it's something completely weird, like, I watched a contemporary French film yesterday on Shudder, but it's not really a horror film, and it's like a sci-fi feminist crazy ass movie, and I was just like, I just saw the poster of it, or I just saw the poster. Excuse me, Grandpa. I saw the thumbnail of it, and I was like, that looks wacky. So I watched it.
Okay.
So yeah, so I don't. The only time I scroll like that is when it's me and Jen, and neither of us wants to commit to wanting to watch something.
And then you're like, "Oh, Bobby and I'll do that." And we'll be like, "Here's a few contenders."
Yeah.
And then eventually, it's just like you're just so tired.
It's a smaller. It's a smaller version of the "What do you want to eat?"
Yeah.
Conflict.
Yeah. And then it's like a big question for us is always like, "Do you want to watch something that like we've seen before? Or do you want to try something new?" And it's like, I don't know. What do you want?
I always want to watch something new. Where Jen is more apt to watch something we've seen before. But she doesn't like it if I've seen it and she hasn't.
Okay.
She's like, it has to be new for both of us.
My husband is very much like, I don't want to watch something new in bed. Because he has this weird thing of like, if I'm in bed, I can't give it my full attention because I might fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So he, like, if we're in bed scrolling, he's it must be something I've seen before.
Interesting. If I do watch something I've seen before, I actually usually don't go to movies. I'll go to like a comedy special.
Because
then you could just listen to it and fade away.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is the news segment and there's, oh boy, lots going on.
There sure is.
So let's talk about some entertainment news. And this is about entertainment news, pop culture news. This has nothing to do with anything really important.
And there's nothing else going on in the news right now.
There's nothing else happening. There's nothing else happening. So, you know. Let's see here. You familiar with Mike Flanagan?
Yeah.
Are you?
Half.
Mike Flanagan.
I know that name. I feel like we've talked about him before.
He's a horror director. He directed Dr. Sleep. The Haunting of Hill House.
Yes.
The Haunting of Bly Manor. This is from Deadline. Mike Flanagan set to direct, quote, radical new take, end quote, on Exorcist for Blumhouse Morgan Creek. Blumhouse has made official that which is already out there. Dr. Sleep filmmaker Mike Flanagan is writing, directing, and producing a radical new take on The Exorcist in a film, a new film with the genre producer and Morgan Creek. This comes in the wake of the last movie, The Exorcist Believer, failing at the box office with $65.5 million U.S. Canada in 136.2 million worldwide. So that whole trilogy that they were setting up,
that's canceled.
Yes, that's canceled.
So there's no, they stopped Deceiver.
Yes, that's not happening. We will never know what happens to that little girl who's in hell.
And we'll never know Ellen Burstyn and
if she grows
Linda
her eyes
Blair
back
was supposed to come back.
Yeah, now that's gonna happen.
That was such a bad movie.
But they're not. Yes, I completely agree. But yeah. I didn't hate it. I was like, "This is a picture."
If it wasn't trying to be a direct sequel to The Exorcist,
mm-hmm.
I would have been like, "Oh, this is okay." But because it so positioned itself as like forget the other sequels. This is the direct sequel to The Exorcist.
Which is funny because it's so... like,
this is horrible
as a sequel to It's so not like... Exorcist. I know, exactly. It doesn't work and as a sequel
to It's got an entirely different tone.
Right. Well, don't you worry, because that's all under the rug. But we can't stop making Exorcist movies.
Stop.
So now we've gone to Mike Flanagan. You know what? I like this Mike Flanagan.
But...
He's been trying to make a Dark Tower series, a proper one, not that crazy, insane one-shot movie that came out a few years ago.
With that hottie.
Idris Elba?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Matthew McConaughey. They're both hot.
That's true.
I like Mike Flanagan. I like Dr. Sleep. I like his TV stuff. I think he's a scary... He's good at making scary shit. You know, I like him way better than I like the team that made the last one, which is the David Gordon Green, who made those awful Halloween movies.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, wasn't Dr. Sleep a big box office failure?
I believe so. You know,
I don't follow
what fails so much in terms of finances.
That's fair.
I more remember like if it's something's critically whatever.
I liked Dr. Sleep. He did a brilliant job of staying true to the novel, but also keeping it in the tone and aesthetic of the original.
Yeah.
But I feel like being different at times.
Time doesn't think back on it fondly. I feel like it kind of happened and now people don't care for it.
I don't even know if people don't care for it, but I feel like everybody doesn't know it exists.
Right. But I liked it. But I really liked,
Haunting of Hill House,
and the second one.
The second one was based on The Turning of the Screw.
Right. I haven't seen his House of Usher, but I know some people liked it. Hey, you know, I'm interested in a Exorcist movie. In the chill session, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Paul Schrader, because I've been chilling a lot with Paul Schrader. And he did Exorcist Dominion, which... good or bad, at least was doing things. Mm-hmm. It was trying to be different and do shit.
It's a prequel, yes?
Yes, it was a prequel, yeah.
Aren't there two different...
Yes, it was never truly released. It was only released on DVD.
Yeah.
Because they took it away and had it mostly reshot by the filmmaker Rennie Harlan, who is much more of like a... kind of he's not a filmmaker like Paul Schrader, and he, you know, added a lot of more exorcisty sort of stuff. So I'm fine with this.
Are you fine with it, or are you just resigned to, like...
Well, I'm resigned, yes, because I think that you know, the only good Exorcist sequel is 3,
is that because Heretic.
No, sir. Because it's based on
Legion,
which is like a spinoff more than a sequel. It's just like another interesting story in that world where magical shit happens. You can't really do... I mean, like... I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but we're almost at 400 episodes, so I'm going to repeat myself a lot. It's similar to Jaws in that because of its great success, Hollywood tried to make a genre out of just a very specific narrative. Mm-hmm. I mean, a girl gets possessed and then is, like, tied to a bed, and then people come and, like, that's not a genre. That's not a genre. So
is this going to be a reboot or a sequel?
It just is radical.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what they'll do.
Remember?
Will they just reboot it again? And just forget that?
I don't know.
Or just try to, like, or just say, like, yeah, that happened, but that has nothing to do with what we're doing.
Remember? Like, I feel like we go in, so we're like, there was a time when prequel was not a word.
Yes.
We go through these, like, fad, like words. Like, reimagination was in style for a minute. And then reboot, and then, like, requels.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's a reboot slash sequel.
Yes.
And it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah. And then Lega sequel,
yeah.
Well, obviously, Believer was trying to be a Lega sequel by bringing back Ellen Burstyn.
It was following almost beat for beat the same thing they did with Halloween, which was doing the same thing that Force Awakens did.
Yes, yes.
It was, like, weirdly very Star Wars.
Right.
Even right down to, like, Linda Blair showing up in the last
minute. Yes, that's true. I love how Ellen Burstyn was so openly disdainful of the movie.
Yeah, she was like, I only did this for charity or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
She's like, this is absolute garbage.
Yes, this movie sucks.
And please don't see this movie.
I'm not trying to be good in it.
My character has her eyes ripped out, and you should rip your eyes out and instead of seeing this picture.
Yeah, also, how do you do that to the legacy character like that?
I don't know, man. I don't know what that movie's doing.
That movie sucks. Anyway.
So what else is in the news? Let's see. We got more sequel news.
Oh, boy.
We got more sequel news from Variety. Practical Magic 2.
Okay.
Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman are in talks to return for the sequel.
This one I can get behind.
After 26 years, the Owens women are returning.
Now, is this going to be... There are sequels to the book in the world of the book, I think.
Yes.
Is this going to be based on...
No clue. Okay. Warner Brothers announced the follow-up to the 1998 classic... Classic is an interesting word here. Practical. It's a strong word. It's certainly remembered and loved film.
It's a well loved
film. Yeah, a classic. I don't know. With Sandra Bullock, Nicole Kidman, and talks to return. We did an episode right here on PCMC for Halloween. What could it be? What do you do first? Do you know what any of this narratives are for the sequel books?
No.
But isn't the film very different from the book?
It is.
So it's very hard then to try to take a template from the sequel books.
I'll bet it's about the daughters that are grown.
So like a real Lego sequel sitch.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Boy.
Me too. I feel the same way about like Beetlejuice. Like there is these sequels that are made like 20, 30, 40 years later, it's like, it's a big risk. It's a big swing.
It is. And you have to contend with like cast members that are just too old to be in these movies.
Yeah.
You know, like the new Ghostbusters movie is like,
oh,
half the characters are like children and the other half are like octogenarians.
So, okay. I wanted to update you on that. So I half watched Frozen Empire.
Yeah.
Because Janine came over with her lovely children.
Yes.
Who wanted to watch. We wanted to keep them from destroying the house.
Sure, sure.
Which they started and did a pretty good job on. So we were like, let's watch something. So we put it on for them because I think Peter requested it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like half watching because I was half talking to Janine and I never finished it. But I was like, this is bad. I did not like it at all. And my main complaint was that ghost was so anachronistic in her mannerisms and the way she talked. And the ghost was supposed to be from like the 1800s or something.
Oh, with the ghost? Yeah, oh, the ghost girl?
The ghost girl.
No, she's from like the 80s.
Oh, I thought she was supposed to be like...
No.
Oh.
She's not supposed to be that old.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, this girl's definitely seen an iPhone.
No. She's supposed to be like modern.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, though, it did suck.
Sure. I just bought it on Blu-ray.
It was bad. I didn't like it. I thought it was like, what a weird direction to take.
I feel you. I have no... I can't defend it in any way.
Yeah.
I can only say that I liked it for the weird reasons that I enjoy
things. That's fair.
I like it because I'm me.
Liked it or not. Yeah.
And I'm predisposed to like it.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, Practical Magic. All right, let's go to the more juicy piece of news because this one bothered me a bunch. And what bothers me more is that no one else gives a shit.
Yeah.
Sony, I'm getting this from Verizon. Sorry, from Variety.
There's a call from Verizon.
Hold on, Verizon's on the line. Sony Pictures buys Alamo Drafthouse.
Wow.
Sony Entertainment has acquired Alamo Drafthouse, the theater chain that inspired a passionate following with creative cocktails, extensive food menu, and strict no talking, no texting policies. The media company acquired Alamo Drafthouse from owners Alamont Capital Partners, Fortress Investment Group, and its founder, Tim League. I'm glad they bought it away from those people because those people have like real shady shit in their fucking repertoire. Like they also own like... orphanages where bad things are happening. Whoa, or whatever.
That's horrible.
Under the new ownership, Alamo Drafthouse will be managed under a newly established division, Sony Pictures Experiences. In a press release touting the sale, the company said it reinforces Sony Pictures Entertainment's long-held commitment to theatrical exhibition and continued innovations in experiential entertainment. Alamo has been quietly soliciting offers for the past several months, but had struggled to find a buyer.
That's concerning to me.
Well,
I don't like that.
It's what's what that they were looking to buy.
Well, first of all, the fact that they were looking to get bought out indicates that they weren't doing very well.
No, they're not. And, no, but no theater is.
True. I don't like, I feel like, you know, I don't know. I don't like that it's going to be owned by Sony.
Well,
I don't trust that they're not going to fuck with the charm of it.
Well, I think that they won't. I think that they won't fuck with the charm of it. I think they'll keep the whole four. I'm a season pass holder at Alamo Drafthouse. I go at least once or twice a week. I love the Alamo Drafthouse. I love when there's new menu orders.
The branding and I love
like at my local Alamo at Staten Island. I love all the kids that work there. Mm. They're all nice. I could see that they're into it. They've got that like almost like Disney World feel of like they like they're into it.
Yeah,
and like it's a nice vibe. But you see, this is what's called a monopoly. And this was illegal until like a couple years ago when the law that made it illegal sunsetted, which is a term I didn't know until I did some research on this. Sunsetting, I think I'm using the right term, is when a law should be and they just forget about it. They just let it lapse. Yeah. And that's because
that was like the ban on assault weapons. We had a ban on assault weapons. It sunset after 10 or 20 years.
Yeah. This sunsetted and nobody cared. And but it's also, which is endemic of
part of the language of the original bill was that you'll reassess it in however many years.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is also endemic of the fact that we only care about like flashy politics and we don't care about like nuts and bolts politics and shit like this is not flashy and exciting. So no one's watching it. But a theater, I mean, look, it's very simple to anybody. If you make films, you shouldn't then also be in the business of exhibiting films. Because why then would Sony not just say we only show Sony movies? Or Sony movies get to play in two of our five theaters, you know, in a two of our five screens in a particular theater. Why not? I mean, you could be really shady and, you know, how they get the numbers are based on an estimate. So why don't they just have the theater and they call on like Monday morning? This is what they used to do. Why not fuck with the numbers and say that your movies are doing better than they're doing? You shouldn't do it. And when they stopped doing this, it was for a reason. And at that time, companies had to choose one or the other. United Artists, which had been a film production company and an exhibition company, stopped making movies. They said, we're just going to go into exhibition. They chose that route.
Yeah.
Sony owning a theater chain, and it's not the biggest theater chain. I believe it's, I don't know if it's in this article. It's like the eighth or seventh biggest chain in America. So it's big, but it's not like the big.
Well, that's bigger than I thought it was.
Because it's bespoke. There's something about it that's like, it's a name now and whatever. And recently Five had closed nationwide, but they're coming back open with the Sony.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's good.
It's just, I don't like monopolies.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, at least they'll still be open. I guess that's the silver lining. And
I mean, I
do worry. I don't want them to fuck with the formula because I feel like it's like the way they do things is cool.
Yeah, I don't want them to fuck with the formula too. I just, but I also like as of now, like they champion like independent movies and stuff. Like the last one they kind of really they were behind was Bottoms. Like, really championed Bottoms and stuff. And, like, I don't want them to be, like, super behind, like, the next Ghostbusters movie or whatever the next fucking
no one needs that.
Sony movie is.
Yeah.
So it's shady. I am happy it's keep going because it's about 80% of my social life going to Alamo.
Yeah, yeah.
Alamo is my favorite restaurant and my favorite place to go. Without Alamo,
is there anything on the menu you haven't had? I mean, barring meat, since you don't eat meat. Is there anything you haven't had?
If that barring meat, that's an interesting question. No, I think I've had everything. I tell you, when there's a new menu item, I am delighted. And when when it's something good, the last one that really I loved was for Dune 2. They had like a bunch of Dune items, and
they didn't have the fuckable popcorn bucket, right? Was that
no? That wasn't that.
Okay.
they do classy pint glasses.
Yeah.
No, they did a spiced popcorn that had like crazy weird spices on it. But then they also did a very sensible like fried pita chips in hummus.
Okay.
With like peppers in it. And it was so good.
And why was that for Dune?
Because it looks like sand. Because hummus looks like sand a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does.
And it does. So, but I loved it while it was going. And I was like, oh, I wish they could fucking make this permanent. I love it.
I think my favorite thing of Alamo that Alamo does is the screening of old movies. So I hope that I hope they don't do away with that.
I don't think they will. Because, you know, it don't cost nothing like it used to. I mean, it's like, it costs nothing.
It's like they pop in the DVD.
I mean.
Essentially.
They basically stream it from a streaming place. Yeah. I remember I went to see, not at Alamo, I went to IPIC, which is another, I don't know if it's a chain.
But that's in the city, right?
Yeah, there's one in the city. And we were there to see Superman, the motion picture. And Super Pets began. And played for like a minute, and they were like, sorry folks, it's the wrong movie, we'll get the right one going. And I realized probably just on a screen of alphabetized movies they hit the wrong one. Super Friends, and what's funny is that movie begins exactly like Superman but just cartoon version.
That's adorable.
I
went to, I mean, there used to be a lot more theaters. What are they called? Revival theater, revival houses or whatever.
Yeah.
There used to be a lot. I mean, there used to be way more before we were like alive. Yeah. But when we were like in college, there were a few more. There was like the Sunshine, and there was
Sunshine.
There was
gone.
One like smaller one that I don't know if I went to with you, but I definitely went to with a few friends a few times in the city, and it was fun. I remember I saw Evil Dead at a midnight screening there. It was a lot of fun, but it was legitimately like you saw the DVD menu on the screen and you saw them click play.
Right.
It was like that.
Yeah.
But it was fucking so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's the experience of seeing it.
Yeah.
It is sad. It makes me as a person feel anachronistic because only people, I think, our age and older care about this experience. I don't think people younger than us have privilege film watching in theaters more than any other kind of film. And that's fine. I mean, I watch movies every day on streaming, like, and I have a big ass stupid TV. So like, I watch most of my movies not in theaters.
Right.
But I still go to theater at least twice a week.
Yeah.
And I'll still go alone if I have to. Like, Jen doesn't see horror movies, so I'll go see a horror movie alone. I'm probably going to go see Maxine this week alone.
Oh, fun. I wanted to watch the other two before I saw Maxine.
Well, you should watch them and come see Maxine with me on Wednesday. Wednesday the 3rd before the holiday.
Oof. Maybe I will. That sounds fun. I don't know. Kids... I don't know. It's so hard. I can't speak.
We need
for kids.
A young person correspondent. Yeah, I really do.
I work with kids, and I feel like I hear them talk about going to the movies, but not nearly as much as like when we were in high school.
What are they just going to finger blast each other? Or are they watching?
I mean, they go see stuff.
Movies make money, right? I mean, like, what do you call it? Endgame was like what, 5 years ago or whatever, 4 years ago, and that's like the most successful movie ever. So people had to have seen that. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really believe that like movie theaters will ever completely go away.
Neither do I. I mean,
but I think that they will. I don't think it's going to be like a thing to. I worry that it's not going to be like a thing to do, where it was like, I don't know. We were growing up. It's like, what do you want to do? You want to bowl? You want to go see a movie?
Right.
You want to like
or eat? Like those are the things.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if it's going to be like that. Although I don't know. I feel like going to the movies is still a big date thing.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, do people even date, or they just meet up on apps and fuck? I don't know.
Now we really just sound like old people. Like,
what are these kids doing on this internet? Well, that happened. I mean, it's going
to... I mean, like...
Were they an independent company before? They were a franchise.
Right.
The first one was in Texas.
The first one was like an independent done by one person.
Yeah.
And then like they franchised and like this other company owned them.
So like, can you be a franchise? Is it one of those franchises where like you could be a franchisee, like you could open your own Alamo?
I think maybe that was the case,
but now that Sony owns it,
I don't know. Yeah. I think Sony's
now it'll
run
be
them.
Fully corporate.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know, but I'm not worried about it changing. Because you know, there are Alamo purists. You know, like, this isn't the first era of Alamo, really. You know, they were Alamo Pure, so like, oh, I miss when people would get drunk and Harry Knowles would sexually assault people. Oh my God. Those were the good days.
How long has Alamo been around?
Since the 90s,
oh, I think. Okay, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, now we're already in like a different regime of Alamo.
Harry Knowles. I didn't know he was...
Oh, yeah, he's a real piece of shit.
Well, I know he's a piece of shit. I didn't know he was doing it at the Alamo.
Oh, he was... Him and the Alamo were like... The Alamo had to do a lot of public relations work to distance themselves from him because they were so in bed with him. He did...
He probably...
But Numathon, which was... Well, he Ain't It Cool News started in Texas.
Yeah.
So, like, Alamo, like, he helped make that scene.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. And even the fact that it's called a draft house, like, it sounds like it's like, oh, this is like a place you go and get fucked up.
Right, right, right.
But it's not. The vibe is really more family-ish, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is a bar, but...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure some people... I mean, those old women that saw the holiday with me
they
and
were,
Jen...
They were whacked.
They were fucked up, so... So, that's still... We talk about that all the time.
That's so funny.
Going to the movies is so important to me and Jen as a couple. It would break my heart if it isn't something that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so... Let's look at some of these trailers. So, let's talk about Paddington in Peru.
I gotta be honest, Mike, this round of trailers this week was wild. So Paddington in Peru.
Have you seen the other Paddington pictures?
I have not. I don't know what to say other than like it looks cute.
It looks adorable.
I don't know anything about
it. Academy Award winner Olivia Colman's in it as a nun.
She sure is.
Well, I didn't know that you had not seen the first two of the Paddington trilogy.
I'm gonna be totally honest. I need to share my truth. I went into this trailer thinking he was a teddy bear. I didn't realize he's an actual
bear. He's a real bear.
I think I got him mixed up with Corduroy.
Oh, boy, you were embarrassing yourself on this episode of PCFC.
Because I know that it's based on a children's novel, right?
You've never heard people talk about how, like, Paddington 2 is low-key the best movie ever?
Yeah, I mean, I have. But, like, I haven't watched it.
I prefer Paddington 1. It's so adorable.
So he's not a... Okay,
he's a bear.
Okay, so...
And he loves marmalade.
Of course he does. Remember we did that episode about, like, things that you think... Like, what you think the movie's about based on the title? So, Paddington, I always was like, he's a teddy bear that was found in the Paddington train station and tube station in London.
No. I think you're conflating Paddington with Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, boy.
Paddington is a real talking bear that wears clothes.
What does he have to do with the Paddington station?
Because that's where he... When he came to America, that's where he went and he was lost. And
wait, Paddington is in London, isn't it?
Yeah. These all take place in England.
Oh, you said when he came to America.
Oh, I'm sorry. When he came to London, when he came to the UK.
So when a bear got on a train
from the wilderness. And he's from Peru.
I got that from the trailer.
Yeah.
So he took
Lucy
the train
in Peru.
From Peru.
Yeah. Or no, he took many, he got here. Paddington 2 is really good because it's got the plot of him getting arrested and going to jail. And then like it's so fucking good.
So he's real. He's alive.
Yeah.
He's not a kid's
imagination. And let me tell you something. He's such a good-hearted bear that he makes everyone around him a nicer person.
Who voices him?
Who does voice him? Let me see. It's the same guy who's been doing it. Paddington. Paddington in Peru. Paddington is voiced by Ben Whishaw.
You want to hear something so crazy?
Yeah.
I just remembered this just the second, and I Googled it to make sure I wasn't making it up, but it's true. Did you know President Zelensky voiced him in the Ukrainian versions?
Really?
Yeah, because you know he was an actor.
Right, right.
And he was actually on a sitcom where he played the president of Ukraine and then became the president of Ukraine. Yeah, amazing. He voiced him in Paddington and Paddington 2, the Ukrainian versions.
That's incredible. Well, now I really want to see those. It looks adorable.
I think I said Vladimir. It's Volodymyr, excuse me.
The trailer begins with Paddington in like a photo booth taking a picture for his passport. Yeah. And, he screws it up.
Why is he just a silly old bear.
He wears a hat. That's his style.
So it seems to me...
And he always keeps a marmalade sandwich under his hat just in case he gets hungry.
Is Paddington... Is he a product of the 90s? Like, when was this book series?
Oh, let's look that up. I do not know.
Because it sounds to me like somebody said, what if I combined Winnie the Pooh, Curious George, like all these attributes, the hat, the slicker, marmalade, and I created something new with it.
How dare you?
That's it sounds derivative.
Paddington is a fictional character in children's literature. He first appeared in 1958.
Wow, I'm wrong.
In the children's book. Well, that's not pre...
Well, it's not pre-Winnie the Pooh, but...
No, yeah, I think. The first book he appeared in is A Bear Called Paddington.
Was he always Peruvian?
He has been featured in more than 20 books by British author Michael Bond. Let's see.
1958, he's as old as our dad.
Yes, but our dad's not as cute as Paddington. Yes, the friendly... And this is a bit problematic. The friendly...
Oh, boy.
Spectacled?
Bespectacled?
No, what's that word?
Spectacled. He wears glasses.
Spectacled bear.
Oh, does he wear glasses?
But that's a type of bear, I think.
Is it? Click that.
It says species spectacled bear.
Oh, I thought it meant he wears glasses. Oh, no, that would be bespectacled, yeah. Not just spectacled.
The friendly spectacled bear is from, quote, the darkest Peru.
Oh, boy.
That's how he describes it.
I don't like that.
With his old hat, battered suitcase, duffel coat, and love of marmalade sandwiches, has become a classic character in children's literature. Paddington is always polite, always addresses people as Mr., Mrs., and Miss.
Oh, that's sweet.
But rarely by first names. A kind-hearted, though he inflicts hard states on those who incur his disapproval.
Maya Angelou wouldn't yell at him like she did at that girl once.
He has an endless capacity for innocently getting into trouble, but is known to try so hard to get things right. He was discovered in London Paddington Station.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
Yeah, by London Paddington. Yeah, he was discovered in London Paddington Station by the human Brown family. And his name is Paddington Brown.
So they adopted this bear?
Yes. He's part of the family, of course. Mm-hmm. Paddington has become one of the most... I'm reading Wikipedia, by the way. Paddington has become one of the most beloved British fictional characters. A Paddington bear stuffed toy was chosen by British tunnelers as the first item to pass through to their French counterparts when the two sides of the Channel Tunnel were linked in 1994. Paddington's books have been translated into 30 languages across 70 titles and have sold more than 30 million copies worldwide. Been adapted for TV, films, and commercials since its first appearance on the BBC in 1966.
Wow. So there was...
It's been around a long-ass time. But don't tell Anthony Bongiorno because he don't know a goddamn thing about
I'm
it.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm just so ignorant.
I would have bet money that you have seen at least one of the two Paddington movies. I'm shocked. Because you're a literate guy. You love, I see your copy of Wizard of Oz from where I'm sitting. You like children's books. I just thought you would have known Paddington.
I don't know. I'm sorry to disappoint. Maybe I guess I have to.
You have disappointed me.
I got to check him out. Well, this looks adorable.
Yeah, and that's all it needs to be.
Yeah.
That's all it has to do.
Remember when Mamma Mia 2 came out?
Yeah.
And there was, what was it? It was like The Onion or whatever. It was like, critics hate fun. It was just like,
yeah.
What do you not like this because you don't like fun?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, you look at something, and I haven't seen this movie, but I'm still going to use it as a
yeah. You're comparison. Riding for it, yeah.
It's like what people have been saying about that new Garfield, which I haven't seen, which is that it doesn't feel like Garfield. If he's not acting like Garfield, mm-hmm. It's not in the spirit of Garfield. Like the books are like quiet and cute, and that's all. And that's what happens in these movies, like. Nothing insane happens. There's no, like, adult jokes.
Oh, so you're saying it's not like that Garfield.
It's not like that Garfield.
Okay.
There's no, like, oh, in this Paddington, he's on a skateboard or, like...
Well, he does. He looks like he gets into some mischief.
Yeah, well, but that's always been part of it.
Okay.
They don't sneak dirty jokes in for the adults in the audience. It's just a genuinely sweet kids movie. You feel like the movie could have been made in any era. It's got a real, like...
Antonio Banderas is in this one. Mary Poppins kind of
vibe, you know, to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Antonio. I am enjoying Antonio's Elder Fox, thing he's doing now. Yeah, he looks good. He looks great, but I like that the roles he's playing now are like...
Yeah, yeah.
Sexy older man.
Yeah, he does it well.
No, I guess we're going to have to move on to our next trailer. Oh, Mr. Burchard.
Oh. Okay, I got mad at you.
I'm sorry.
Because this... So I knew nothing.
Sounds great.
Please, I'll be very upset if you feel that way. I didn't know anything about this. at all. Yeah. I saw you sent it, and I was like, oh, an animated series. This looks fun. And so I put it on, and the second I saw Adam Carolla's face, I said, wait a second. And then I saw Adam Carolla. Then I saw Megyn Kelly. And then I said, what the
fuck? It's produced for Daily Wire. Watching?
And then I noticed the Daily Wire logo on the upper part of the portion of the screen. And then I saw Roseanne.
Yeah.
And I said, what? I was like, oh, this is a bit.
It's They're not, all it's
having
sort of
a great time. They're having a great time.
Oh, yeah. They are. Well, that's what I want to talk about.
Candace
right?
Owens was fired from this show. You know,
she was. Why?
She was supposed to be the character played by that other conservative talk show host, Sage something or other.
Oh, the one who's like a kid.
Yeah.
She's like 18.
That was Candace Owens. Candace Owens got fired from the. This is so bizarre because it's Candace Owens. Candace Owens got fired from the Daily Wire for being pro-Palestine.
Oh, I see.
And so they fired her for being anti-Semitic.
I see.
Now, I don't know anything other than that headline that I read, apparently. Right. I'm sure she's also very anti-Semitic and crazy.
Because she's
crazy in general.
Right, she's insane.
But
it's just funny that if they're like, don't you dare have one different opinion from us.
Yeah, exactly. So she was fired off of this show. Which is interesting, but it could have been Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens. Like, what the fuck?
Produced by Ben Shapiro.
So it looks.
So it's not a bit in the sense.
It looks horrible.
It's not a bit in the sense that I was setting you up. I mean, maybe I was setting you up a little bit to surprise you, but I think it's worth talking about because, it just looks so bad. And the way the trailer is, you know, it's an animated series about teachers. Mm-hmm. And
anti-woke teacher.
Yes, and Mr. Bertram, I guess, is like the gym teacher, or whatever.
Woodshop,
of course. But then there's like the liberal teacher who says
the
what
working
he's,
man teacher, Mike.
Right?
That's
right?
Not
right.
The elite academic teacher.
Right. There's the character that's like, oh, I'm a cisgendered
white
straight
man
and
I apologize.
Yeah. You know, this comedy. Ugh. They skewer white hot topics like. Gender,
but
and
I mean,
man buns and veganism.
Oh God! When I saw that first, that's one of the first jokes in the trailer is the veganism joke, and I was like, "This is God. Who finds this funny?" And the answer is a whole lot of people.
They do,
but then it is a who's who of he's still around. Like it's a who's who of who's
well,
that.
What bummed me out,
Jay Moore.
Yes.
It's like everyone, I was like, oh, he's weirdly conservative now. Oh, she's weirdly conservative now. Oh, God, this whole thing is all weirdly conservative people.
Well, I found myself bummed out by the people that I didn't know, like Danny Trejo. I really hope he's just doing this for a paycheck.
I was upset by Danny Trejo.
I really hope he's just doing this for a paycheck.
He's responsible for one of my favorite lines in cinema, which is "Goodnight, Danny Trejo" from Muppets Most Wanted.
And I was a little disappointed by Rob Riggle too. Like I know Rob Riggle was a military man before he was a comedian.
I was disappointed
but being in the military doesn't necessarily mean you have to be hateful.
It doesn't. No.
So I didn't.
I knew. I think, but I was in denial that Putty is really conservative.
He really, which is, that's, he is Putty. He is a dumb guy.
Yeah. I mean, we all know Roseanne.
Roseanne, which is like, by the way, the trailer hauls out Roseanne like, here is our ace in the hole.
And it's like this
comedy legend.
This corpse.
Right.
Megyn Kelly is so interesting to me because it's like, Megyn Kelly was like one of the first women to vocally be like, Donald Trump's disgusting.
Mm.
And now, but it's like, good to see you haven't learned a damn thing, Megyn Kelly.
Right.
And then there was that weird movie Bombshell that was like, well, who is this movie for?
Yeah.
Who
am
I supposed to be rooting for in this?
Yeah.
but I saw her and I was like, is she even in journalism anymore?
It's crazy that she's a voice on an animated comedy. Like,
oh, well, that woman who replaced Candace Owens, Sage, whatever her name is, she was on ESPN and she left or got fired ESPN because she refused to get the vaccine.
Well, that's the thing. I think they've
These are all like people who have been canceled.
Right. And well, I think it's also like, you know, I do think they complain about this and they're right. I do think to be a conservative in the entertainment industry is hard, and people don't want to work with you.
Sure.
So there's so few. They're like at the bottom of the fucking barrel.
So what's your prediction for this? Because when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, this is laughably bad." The reviews are that it's painfully unfunny. But then, like everything else conservative, it might get tremendous ratings.
Well, but it's on like there's no Daily Wire channel, right? Isn't it just a streaming service?
It's a streaming service, but like
right. So what does
my
that
thing
mean?
About my theory always about conservative media is that it always gets like such amazing ratings because there's so few of them, so they're all congregating and flocking to one place. So like what other, if this is like it looks like it's trying to be like the anti-woke version of Big Mouth or something
like that.
So it looks like it's like if everybody just out of political principle chooses to tune into this, it could be really successful even if it's bad.
How many people even are subscribed to Daily Wire?
Probably a decent amount.
I don't know. I don't see. I mean,
who's the animator?
I don't know.
It looks like the animation is like the same animation as like Big Mouth and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That I don't see it being successful. Animated series are very laborious and they're hard to make. And I don't see this being successful.
When I tell you, I did not hee.
I think
I did not ha.
Yeah.
I did not smile. Like there were some jokes where I was like, "How is that even a joke?"
They have a very hard time. They've always had a hard time making conservative comedy. Only lately are they having a better time with it because liberals have become a little bit more insane. Mm-hmm. So there's
easier to make fun of.
There's easier things to skewer, but there's still only so many things like
that one guy.
Like the trailer gives it all. Like here's a vegan joke. Here's a joke about race. Here's a joke
there's
about
that one
gender.
Guy from he's from Last Comic Standing. The guy who was like, I used to be a black man and that used to be enough, but now I have to be non-binary and non-something. And I was like, this is the whole joke is using the word non-binary.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's so weird.
Right, right.
Ugh, man. It looks fucking painful. What happened to Roseanne?
Ugh.
That's one of the greatest tragedies of my life, I think.
I know, because
I loved her so
much. And I loved her sitcom so much. And
what a disappointment.
Yeah, I know.
She's also not even remotely funny anymore.
Yeah, not...
And that Roseanne reboot, that one season she was on, was funny because she was not writing on it.
Yeah.
She had, like, good writers, like Wanda Sykes and... what's her name? Whitney Cummings.
Well, she was never like a strong stand-up.
No,
like,
her stand-ups always sucked. That's true. She was just a good personality.
Yeah. Like, she never had like great jokes and stuff.
She was the domestic goddess.
Right. Like, she kind of like, she was a persona.
The screaming housewife.
Yeah.
She developed as an actress throughout the course of the show.
Right. And now she's just your insane aunt.
Yeah, man. Man, oh man. I remember before she went fully Trumpy, she had remember that special Blondes Bombshell?
Yeah.
And it was bad. And I was like, oh, she's not funny.
Yeah.
So she was already on the decline before that happened. Well, it's very upsetting and it looks horrible.
Okay. So our next film is, by the way, let's talk about Adam Carolla. It's funny because Adam Carolla used to co-host the Man Show with Jimmy Kimmel. And boy, have they gone in different directions. Jimmy Kimmel's like a genuine, huge star who's super liberal.
But I was going to say, Jimmy Kimmel is like, I think he still has lower, I think he still comes in second to Colbert ratings-wise, but Jimmy Kimmel's a huge star, and Jimmy Kimmel's monologue every single night for the last 8 years has been like making fun of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So he is, and he just hosted like a huge fundraiser for Biden.
Yeah, he's a big deal.
It's crazy
it's
that he was his side. He was Adam Carolla's sidekick. He wasn't even like his co-host.
He was?
I think so. I think Adam Carolla was like the bigger name.
He's so much funnier than. I mean, even like politics aside, Adam Carolla is not funny.
I mean, the Man Show premise in hindsight is so fucking stupid.
Yeah, you're right.
Remember, they were like girls on trampolines.
Oh boy. Yep. Right, guys? But it's sad because, like, one never grew out of that.
Yeah.
And then, like, I'm sure he really believes what he believes. But sometimes you feel like, are you just going conservative because, like, you can't think of any other, there's no other niche you can find for yourself? Like, you're like, I'll just lean into this. I'm kind of an asshole who hates people.
Well, you know who they got next? I feel like it's a cult and they get people. They got Michael Rapaport.
Is that true?
Michael Rapaport has become, like, and he used to be like very outspokenly liberal like up until like a few months ago, I want to say.
Really?
He's like done a huge, he's like educated himself, air quotes, and is like, he's done a big turnaround. And it's like, oh man, not Michael Rappaport. Right. Take anyone
but him. He's also a guy that's kind of known as being lovable dumb guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of turned.
Well, too bad. All right, let's move on. I'm not worried of the success of Mr. Burcham.
Watch, it's going to be like the number one show on TV.
It's not on TV.
It's on the Sprite Network.
Yeah, it's on fucking IndieWire. Or DailyWire. Not IndieWire.
DailyWire. Streaming on Sega Genesis. Yeah.
Those jokes
always kill me.
You need a fucking Coleco to watch it.
ColecoVision.
All right.
Wait, can we remember that Mad About You reboot that was on like the info channel?
Yeah. There was like scrolling. God, underneath
it's so
it.
Pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy.
It's upsetting. Anyway.
All right, so our last trailer is Nosferatu. I guess it's the third big version of Nosferatu.
The big one was the 1922 one, right?
No, it's earlier than that, is it? Oh, no, 22. Yeah, the
silent.
F.W. Murnau film. What's interesting about Nosferatu is a ripoff. It's,
of Dracula.
It's completely the same narrative of Dracula with the names changed. Yeah. But because the film was so good and scary and interesting that it, too, has a legacy. So it's weird for something that's basically a ripoff to have its own integrity. Like, I'm sure you could tell watching this trailer, it's just Dracula with different names.
Yeah, yeah,
it is. You've got Willem Dafoe playing the Van Helsing-type character. But it looks good. It's by Dave Eggers, who did The Witch and Lighthouse. He's done a lot of really cool...
Not Dave Eggers. Is it Dave Eggers?
Dave Eggers.
Okay, who's the Eggers who's a writer?
Oh, I'm not sure, but I'm thinking of Dave Eggers.
Okay,
I haven't seen those movies, but I like The Witch, The Vavitch.
I didn't see The Vavitch.
Wait, maybe I'm wrong. Wait, who does Dave?
No, Dave Eggers is the writer.
Who's the filmmaker?
Peter?
No. Let's see. We're just old people.
We'll cut all of this out.
Not understanding things.
Robert Eggers? Yes.
Robert Eggers.
Robert Houston Eggers.
Robert Eggers.
He's your age. Born 1983.
Okay. So I like Robert Eggers' movies. I like The Vavitch. I like, you know, I like The Lighthouse. With what I've seen, he's got a real interesting style. This movie has a desaturated look that almost looks black and white.
Yeah. It looks scary.
Yeah, it looks good. There's one shot where the camera's like flying towards a castle, which reminded me of Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. Mm-hmm. It looks good. I like a Dracula tale, you know. There's not a lot to do with it.
But... What do they say? They're like, he's coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like multiple characters say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you see the rats in the street.
Yeah.
I
he's got an interesting look.
Well, they haven't showed it that much. In this trailer, at least, they don't really show Nosferatu that much. You just see him kind of like in silhouette.
So he doesn't have like the long fingers and the
I imagine head. He's going to look like Count Orlok looks in the original.
No, it looks good.
I'm for it. I like a Dracula movie. Nicholas Hoult is in this, and he was also in that horrible Renfield movie. Although he's not Renfield in this. He's more, I think, the Harker character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love a Dracula tale.
Yeah, it looks good. I think it looks good. I think it looks super scary. Yeah, it's coming out. I love that it's coming out Christmas.
Good.
Succumb to the darkness this Christmas.
Good. Fucking
that means it's probably really good, because I feel like if they released it on Halloween, that'd be the obvious choice, but that's also like not a contender for anything.
Right, right. Halloween's a weird time.
Right. When you release something around Christmas, it's like, oh, like maybe we could get some Oscar noms out of this.
Mm. Is it? I'm a little shaky on like when Oscars, like
Oscar season.
Yeah.
It's like,
because there's summer, but that's for different kinds of movies.
I think it's the winter. It's usually the winter. Because then the Oscars are in February.
You think I know some of these things.
Yeah.
But I don't. Again, there's not a lot to say. It looks visually very interesting.
Yeah.
The
composition is interesting.
And I do like the difference just visually between Orlok and Dracula, because he's bald and he looks way more reptilian and demon-like. And he's played by Bill Skarsgård, who is also a reptilian demon person.
In
real life.
He's he's it, right?
Yes. Yes. And who else is in this movie? Lily Rose Depp.
Count Orlok.
Yes.
Commonly but erroneously known as Nosferatu.
Right.
It's like calling the shark Jaws.
You're right, right, right. Someone says vampire in this trailer, which I love. I love a vampire.
It reminds me of 30 Rock.
Vampire.
Vampire. So what does Nosferatu mean?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I've actually not seen the Murnau film. And then the other big one, there's Nosferatu from 1979 with Klaus Kinski, directed by Werner Herzog. Which is another one that's supposed to be really good, but I haven't seen
it. A big Herzog head. The original one was an unofficial adaptation of Bram Stoker's
Dracula. I believe Stoker's wife sued them.
I don't see that, but I'm on Wikipedia, so, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break and we'll come back with the Chill Sessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined still by Anthony Bongiorno. Anthony, how you doing?
I'm doing really good.
Welcome to the Chill Shesh. This is the session where we talk about the stuff we're currently chilling with. But what are you chilling with?
I'll give you my update on my Cheers journey.
Please.
I feel like the last 8 times I've been on this podcast, I've talked about Cheers.
Please. The people are dying to know.
I'm still chilling with Cheers because there are 1 million episodes.
Right.
We are officially in the Kirstie Alley era.
Officially.
We've made it to season 6.
Incredible.
But what I really want to talk about is...
I can't believe she comes that long into it.
It's...
You think that's the end of the show.
It becomes a different show, and I don't know how they pulled it off.
Yeah, because people think of it as still good. It was still a big hit.
So a lot of people think it's better.
Wow.
And it's season 6 through 11.
Wow.
So the Sam and Diane thing.
And that made her a huge star.
And I feel like the Sam and Diane thing, people in hindsight are like, oh, Sam and Diane was the beginning. Sam and Diane was the first 5 seasons. That's a long time.
Is he also romantically linked with Kirstie Alley?
So they probably flirt with it, but I don't think so. He hits on her all the time.
Yeah.
But she seems genuinely uninterested in him. And she's his boss.
How? Oh, okay.
I didn't know any. I knew that she came later in the show, but I didn't know how or why. He sells the bar.
Okay.
Comes back. There's a time jump.
Okay.
He sells the bar after the marriage to Diane falls apart.
Uh-huh.
And then... he comes back a year later and the bar is totally different. They're all wearing uniforms and it's weird. And a real Perlman's character, Carla, is oh, well, you know, the corporation you sold the bar to makes us wear these they're TGI Fridays-ish outfits. And some of the decor in the bar is different and it's more TGI Fridays-ish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's that he sold the bar is now corporately owned.
Interesting.
And so there's a big boss that they refer to that we haven't met yet, who works in the corporate office, and the manager is Kirstie Alley.
Interesting.
And he basically convinces her to hire him back. So he doesn't own the bar anymore.
He just works at
the bar. He works at the bar as a bartender that was once his, and she's his boss.
When does Woody come in?
Woody comes in season 4, I think. Yeah, I think Coach was the first 3 seasons. Okay. I think Coach actually died toward the end of season 3 because he stopped showing up in a bunch of episodes, but then he makes it for the finale, and I think it's because he was really sick. And you could see him losing a lot of weight and looking much older towards the end of season 3.
It's crazy that the show went on so long and changed so much in the middle. And
the original, because every sitcom has the sit, and the sit of this com originally was a retired... womanizing ex-alcoholic baseball player who owns a bar with his old coach, has this will they won't they Hepburn and who's the guy,
Cary Grant
and Cary Grant relationship with this woman.
Yeah.
And then it completely is, it becomes a new show. Once she leaves, it's like the will they, won't they is gone. It's much more of an ensemble. It's becomes like way more workplace.
Why did Shelley Long leave?
She wanted to do movies.
And how'd that work out for her?
I don't think very well. I mean, she was in True Beverly Hills. You know, she was in Outrageous Fortune. She was in a few things.
And how did Kirstie Alley work out? Things worked out okay for her?
Well, she just passed, Mike. She became...
I'm not making fun of the fact she died. I'm making fun of the fact that she became
insane. Like a Roseanne.
She became like a Roseanne. Towards the end of her life.
Although not as...
Then there was the fat actress part.
She was also
life.
Scientologist from way back. So she was always kind of crazy.
Oh, so she was always cuckoo bananas.
Yeah, she was always cuckoo bananas. But I always really liked her. And I always thought that she looked like our mother. So I have... maybe it's something that you probably won't see. But like just as a kid, I associated her with... our mother, I thought that they looked alike.
Yeah.
And so I always liked her, and I was sad when she went crazy, and I was sad when she passed away also. But she's good on the show.
She's good. She was good. People loved her.
Yeah. The show is it's a different dynamic, but it works. It's crazy for like, I mean, I guess the only thing that's like that now that's still on is like It's Always Sunny has been on forever and has like changed a bunch.
But it hasn't changed that much. It's like, it's not like in the middle of Always Sunny, it completely became a completely different thing. Like when a show does that, you think this is the end when they're retooling it like this. And the fact that with Cheers, it just has a whole nother era that people also like a lot.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
So that's what I'm chilling with. And I was chilling with, I'm reading The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Uh-huh. What's that about?
It's, Martin Mull has died.
Oh, no, this just in.
This just in from the news desk. Martin Mull at age 80.
Oh, I love Martin Mull.
From, it says Mary Hartman, and Veep. Doesn't mention Roseanne. Interesting. I know him best from Roseanne.
I know him best, yes, but also I always think of him as Clue.
Oh, yeah. Colonel Mustard.
Yeah.
We lost
He's great.
Him. Age 80, he was great.
He will always be
no
great
longer with us
in my
upsetting
heart.
So The Secret History is it's a real, this novel was published in
19- New York Post says known from Roseanne and Arrested Development.
Oh, I forgot.
Gene Parmesan.
Rest in peace,
Gene Parmesan.
This episode is dedicated to Martin Mull.
Yes.
Gene Parmesan, how you doing? Bill does that great. Gene Parmesan, how you doing?
Well, he was only 80.
He's a great character actor that you didn't talk about.
Oh, I was just today saying to Janine, because the bear came back. And
yeah. I didn't know you were into the bear. I didn't know you were that white. I saw you.
How dare you?
I saw you made a Facebook status about it, and I was like, oh, boy.
Well, he's, that's really more white it. Than liking the bear. Making a Facebook status. It's a white old man.
I saw you made a Zanga post about it.
Oh, come on. But Oliver Platt's in that, and I was like, damn, I didn't
think he's good.
But like, as we said on that episode, you're just gonna forever.
There's so many.
There's so many. Martin Mull, goddamn. Colonel Mustard.
That's upsetting.
What the hell are you talking about? A book?
Book, yeah. The Secret History. It's very well known. It was published in 1990.
The Secret History of Martin Mull. I was like, when you said that, I was like, wow, what was he up to?
This segment is falling apart. It was published in 1992.
Okay.
So it is not new.
What is The Secret History of?
It is a well-known book. It's something that, like,
not by me.
It has been on my, like, TBR pile for, like, a million years.
Sure.
Donna Tartt, author of The Goldfinch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It is an... I'm going to read you the synopsis from Wikipedia, because I'm not very good at summarizing things. It is an inverted detective story narrated by one of six students. So the narrator is Richard Papin, who reflects years later upon a situation that led to the murder of his friend, wherein the events leading up to the murder are revealed sequentially. So the book starts with, we killed Bunny, who's one of his friends.
Uh-huh.
And then it tells the story of how they got to the point where they killed Bunny. And it's basically these...
So it's not a mystery, or is it still mysterious?
They call it an inverted detective story, because it's not... It's your... There, you know who did it. He's telling you how it was done.
So it's like Columbo.
Yeah. And then basically what I'm like 150 pages left. Because it's like 500 something pages. And it's like, they haven't been caught yet. I assume they're going to. Maybe they won't. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It is of the 6 classics students at like a very small like New England college who I don't want to. I guess the book came out in 1992. It's not spoiling anything.
Yeah.
They wanted to do like a Dionysian. I always say that word wrong. Dionysian bacchanal.
Okay.
And they do it, and they accidentally kill someone.
Yeah.
And then, so they kill like this just random guy, and then they cover.
Well, I don't know what that is. I know the term bacchanal is what you say when it's people are being crazy.
It's like a
what's this, a it's bacchanal?
Like I guess it's from like they're all classic students. I guess it's like an ancient Greek ceremony ritual thing where like you get like really drunk and have like a fucking crazy party. Essentially, right. Like it's like an orgy slash party slash. Well,
okay,
like,
you're okay.
It's wild, and then it's like the goal of it is to like. It's like you're achieving a state of like where you're no longer yourself because you're like becoming one with Dionysus, who is the god of like celebrations.
Okay.
So they accidentally kill this guy, and then the kid bunny, who is always kind of an outsider in the group, isn't there, but he finds out about it, and then he's like threatening to tell on them, so they kill him.
Oh my.
So it's Dark Academia is the vibe. And it's known as the novel that, like, helped.
That's, like, an aesthetic, though.
Yeah, no, so it is, but it's, like, but it's also this book.
Okay.
And it's, like, the book that's, like, helped popularize Dark Academia like, a genre of, like, here, this is a book about, like smart kids doing, like, you can see, like, Cruel Intentions took a lot from this, probably.
Oh, okay.
Like it's like private school kids up to no good. What's interesting? So I'm really liking it so far. She's a really good writer. The book is really well. It's like a classic, and I'm enjoying it. What I didn't know until I started reading it is that she went to Bennington College and was a classmate of like she was in that literary brat pack group with like Bret Easton Ellis.
Oh, really?
And Jay McInerney and like. This college is based on the same college where Rules of Attraction takes place.
Interesting.
And it's all in of a piece. It's all in the same world.
Okay.
And this book is actually this novel is dedicated to like to my friend Brett, which is Brett Easton Ellis.
Oh boy.
But she's a way better writer than he is.
Interesting.
So that's what I'm chilling with. I mean, you that's don't know cool. it, but it's a very well known book. And yeah. It's never been made into a film. And The Goldfinch was made into a film, which was a huge bomb. So then from there, she was like, none of my work will ever be made into a movie again.
And when do you read that book?
So I'm on summer break now, so it's easier for me to read. So I've been reading it during the day. Nice. She's a little long. It's like 550 pages.
Uh-huh.
It's taken me a long time because I'm a slow reader. But like I said, I'm like 150 pages from the end. It's really good. I would recommend it. I think you'd like it, too. It's a good read.
Cool.
It's a little slow at the beginning, but it picks up.
Okay. All right. Have you ever read Cain's Jawbone?
No.
Do you know what that is? It's that book. Maybe you know the cover. It's a book where the pages are out of order, and it's a mystery, and you're supposed to like put the pages in order. Have you ever?
No. I've never even heard of that.
You never heard of it? You've never seen this cover? Come on. I don't know why Amazon's.
Let me see.
This is the cover.
I've never seen that.
Cain's Jawbone. If James Joyce and Agatha Christie had a literary love child, this would be it. Daily Telegraph.
Ooh, okay.
The world's most fiendishly difficult literary puzzle. And it's... I got to look up who the real author is, but on the cover it says by Takamada, who is an inquisitor from the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay. Oh, Torquemada?
Takamada, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you said
Takamada. I thought it was like a Japanese name.
Oh, no. Takamada, as played by Mel Brooks in History of the World, Part 1. Well, I'm chilling with the cinema.
Oh, is that not what you were chilling with?
No, I just wanted to. I don't know. You made me think of it. I'm chilling with the films of Paul Schrader. Right now, well, in June on Criterion Channel, which is interesting that they call their streaming service the Criterion Channel. what I love about that streaming channel is that every month they have different folders and different emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
So there was Paul Schrader. So a bunch of Paul Schrader movies and an interview with Paul Schrader.
Do they have The Canyons?
Yes, I haven't watched that yet.
It's bad.
Okay. well, here's the thing that I want to, that fascinates me about Paul Schrader, which is that he's a man of contradictions. He's a good filmmaker, but also a bad filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's liberal, but also kind of racist. He's a human, but he sounds and looks like a frog. He's bald, but has terrible dandruff. He's an extremely odd human being. And his films, some of his films are brilliant, but some of them are just so weird. And then he is a person, like, he's become famous recently for, like, taking Ambien and making weird screeds on Twitter.
Like, well, Cher does the same thing.
He had a whole thing on Twitter where he was like, A24 won't let me put me in movie jail. He was going to make a movie with A24, and he was like, well, you know, look at this script. It's got Kevin Spacey written all over it. And they were like, we're not making a movie with Kevin Spacey. So he wrote a whole thing on Twitter like, look, there's the art and then the artist and then the demon, and just because someone's evil doesn't, like he basically was like I can understand that point of view if you're saying, okay, there's great movies that he was in that you still want to watch, but to say I'm still gonna hire him. But he's got a bunch of weird takes like that. He's got tons of weird takes. But he also was a critic. He started as a critic, and he still, I think, has the mind of a critic. He wrote a book some time ago called, like, The Transcendentalist Guide to Cinema, and it's about slow cinema and movies that are slow on purpose and how they draw you in. He's just a fascinating person. I said that he's a little bit racist, and the most obvious example of that is he wrote Taxi Driver, and he says openly, like, oh yeah, when I wrote Taxi Driver, I was in a very dark, bad place, and I was Travis Bickle.
So, and isn't...
And Travis Bickle's racist.
Now, it's been a while.
Yeah.
But isn't... Travis Bickle is essentially like, we need to clean up this city.
Right.
Like, clean up the city, it means, like, kill black people.
And other...
And Harvey Keitel.
And yeah, right, right, exactly. Harvey Keitel's character was black in the script, and then they were like, we can't do this.
Yeah. He's still... And he's doing, like, a very problematic...
Yes, he
black
is.
Sense.
Yes. But also, like... I saw, and this is a movie that flopped, but I actually liked it a lot. He did a movie called Patty Hearst, which is based on Patty Hearst's book.
Yeah.
And Ving Rhames, he played like the head of the people that kidnap her. And I feel like the way that character is written is very racist.
Mm-hmm.
And he also made a genuinely great movie called Blue Collar with Richard Pryor, and I feel like there's some racism in the writing of that movie as well. He's just a weird guy. Like, he says that he was Travis Bickle, but what I actually think he is I think he's Iris. I think he's Jodie Foster's character, because he was raised as a Calvinist, and he didn't see any movies until he was a teenager, and everything was bad, and everything was evil and wrong.
Mm.
And I actually think that there's... And despite his movie, again, this is another contradiction, but despite his movies being sometimes very incendiary, I think there's a naivete to the way he handles things like sex and violence. I still think he's that Calvinist inside that, like, is tempted by violence and sex, but doesn't totally understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest... like autobiographical movie he made is Hardcore, which is famous now for one of the scenes from Hardcore has become a meme. Hardcore is about a Calvinist family and a father and daughter, and the daughter runs away to go into porn and becomes a drug addict and does porn. And there's a scene where he hires a private detective played by Peter Boyle to find the daughter. And he's like, oh, I found your daughter. And he brings him to a movie theater and he plays them the porno. And he watches it and he's like, oh, God, turn it off.
Oh, yeah.
Turn it off. And that's become a meme where they'll cut it in with any terrible movie.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be like that in like Jack and Jill. but the movie itself is great. And I think he's the girl in that, like the girl in that who runs away from Calvinism, like he went into real movies, and she goes into porn. But I think for him, movies are dirty. You know, like because there's something dirty about his movies. He also did, well, I think,
The Canyons. It's Lindsay Lohan, and the male lead is James Dean, who was a porn star. Yeah,
right. You've seen that?
Yeah.
Now I haven't seen that one yet. How's that one?
It's bad.
What is it about?
Oh God. Nothing. What is it about? It's a screenplay by Bret Easton Ellis, directed by Paul Schrader.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll just leave it at this. The opening of the movie is,
don't be afraid to spoil it for me.
It's a montage of closed movie theaters. Okay. Because it's somehow also, it's like this domestic drama about a controlling partner who's played by James Dean, who invites people to come have sex with his girlfriend, who's played by Lindsay Lohan, and she's afraid to get out of the relationship. And then somehow there's a murder somewhere. I don't know. But it's also somehow a comment on the death of cinema. I don't know. Okay. I really don't know. And I've seen it, I think, twice.
I need to see it. See,
it got some good reviews, honestly.
Some of his movies, I think they're all interesting. Some were huge bombs. Like,
does he have a hand in Joker, or is Joker just a ripoff of him?
It's just a ripoff of
Taxi Driver,
basically. I brought him up before because he directed that Exorcist movie. He's done a lot of weird stuff, but
he did Raging Bull, right?
He wrote Raging Bull, and Scorsese directed
it. Is he a better screenwriter than he is a director, you think?
Probably. But his movies are, like, some of his movies are strong, or like real, like, hits and like classics, like Affliction, which is based on a book, and it's the film stars Sissy Spacek and Nick Nolte, and it's about a small town cop who is an alcoholic and grew up in an alcoholic abusive family, and he thinks there's a murder plot, and it's just I forget where it takes place, but it's like snowy and horrible, and everybody's drunk. And it's just a really great drama. And it was a huge, huge, it's probably his biggest hit as a director. And it's incredible. It's genuinely a great movie. But then, like, he does Patty Hearst, which is, like, just, it has brilliant things in it, but it's also, like, weirdly, like, sometimes he's making fun of the whole thing, and sometimes he's, like,
who plays Patty Hearst? Does she play herself?
No. No, it's funny that you say that. She started doing movies because John Waters saw the Paul Schrader Patty Hearst movie and changed his mind, because he was one of the people who didn't believe her, that she was brainwashed or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he invited her to be in, I think, Crybaby was her first movie. And then she's in a lot of his movies.
She's in Serial Moms.
Yeah. Yeah. And now she's the mother-in-law to comedian Chris Hardwick.
Oh,
he's married to her daughter. But people, like, people, it was a big failure, Patty Hearst. But it's got brilliant things. Like, the beginning, like, the whole, like, beginning where they kidnap her and they blindfold her. And she's, like, blindfolded for months, right? The way he films that is, it's all, like, what she imagines things are. So, like, she's, like, in this closet. In some scenes, the closet's, like, huge. In some scenes, it doesn't. Sometimes the people are in silhouette. So when people are outside of a closet talking to her, like, she imagines, like a gate around it rather than, like, in a house. And then she's, like, I think back about my childhood. And you see, like, her childhood memories, but the little girl's wearing a blindfold in the memories. The way he does all of that is so brilliant.
So she was kidnapped for ransom, right? Because she's of the Hearst family.
Yeah. And they didn't give it to them.
That sounds. And
they also had crazy demands. Like, you have to give a $50 stimulus to every American. Like, like, it was a political
thing. And then they brainwashed her to join.
Yeah.
Because I know there's, like, footage of her, like, doing stuff with them.
Right. She robbed a bank with
them. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's people. Crazy. And then she went on trial, and people were like, was she really brainwashed, or is she bullshitting us? And then her lawyer was like, well, she wouldn't have robbed a bank if she hadn't met these people.
Yeah.
Kind of
sounds a little bit like the Getty kidnapping, with, like, that movie that All the Money in the World was based on.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I don't know a lot about that. That's one. A Ridley Scott movie. Yeah. I like that movie, although I read that it's, like, not very true to the real story.
I didn't say who's it was. She was played by the actress who passed away very young. What's her name?
Natasha Richardson?
Yes. She's great as Patty Hearst.
I don't know. I was thinking her. Maybe I have seen clips of it, because that name just came to me. And she kind of looks like her.
Yeah. She's actually, when young, Natasha Richardson looks so much like Jenna Maroney.
She does. She looks like Jane Krakowski.
Yeah. But it's got the weird Paul Schraderisms. Like, there are comedy scenes where it's like, this is weird. And, like it ends with her saying, like, the last lines of the movie, like, fuck them or, like, whatever. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's so weird. Like, and then another weird movie that he made that I like that was not a success was he remade the horror movie The Cat People, but he made it all about incest, which the original one wasn't about. He's just, I think, a fascinating filmmaker, and you know, he's fascinating. I don't agree with the man a lot, although sometimes he has brilliant things to say. Like, he'll say two things and the third one will be bananas. Like, he'll say something brilliant, and then, like, the third thing will be, like, something so outlandish, you'll be like, oh, that's insane. So it's just fascinating. I've really enjoyed, like, watching all of these movies. Blue Collar also, I think, probably the best performance Richard Pryor ever gave as an actor. That's a very good movie, too. And that's sort of like a comedy. He's done a lot of different weird shit, like an Exorcist movie, a horror movie, yeah. comedies, Patty Hearst. He did. He also did Autofocus, which was a biography of the actor from. What was his name? He was played by Greg Kinnear in the movie. The actor from what show? It was a Hogan's Heroes, who was. He died, I think, in like. Yeah, Bob Crane. The life of TV star Bob Crane and his strange friendship with electronics expert John Henry Carpenter. Like, he was like a sex addict. So, like, he's done, like, a couple biographies, mm-hmm. too.
It's interesting.
Of, like, interesting, weird people. He's a very weird guy. But he did an interview recently, and he talked about liking Barbie. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. Like,
it's always weird to hear somebody talk about, like, other things they like. Yeah, when you associate them so much with their work.
Right, and their work's bananas. Yeah. And they're like, I like Barbie. He's a weird guy. And as he ages, he becomes more of a frog. He's a frog man. So that's what I'm chilling with mostly. Okay. I'm not reading anything, as we talked about before. And am I chilling with anything else? That's basically, I've been watching a lot of just, you know, like I've been saying the last couple episodes, like the Criterion Channel, I think, is it's one of the cheapest streaming services, but it's so fucking good.
How much is it?
It's like $8 a month. And every month is like, they make a big deal out of it being a new month, because it's like, this month we have this, like, do like a film festival, like we have this folder and that folder, like the films of this and the film, and it's not always a director. Like, there was one also in June that was like films with synthetic soundtracks, so it was all movies that had like synth soundtracks, so it's just great stuff on there. But that's it. I can't endorse Paul Schrader, but
as a person.
But I could say his movies are good, I think. Some of them. Mm, I haven't seen Canyons yet.
So let me know when you do.
It's probably terrible.
Let me know when you do.
But don't you find it interesting when don't you find people who make interesting bad movies good? Like there's bad where it's like, I'm not trying, or I am trying, but I'm just completely don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Like, when something's bad because the creator is obviously like a true artist and is just putting his weirdness into it. Like, I find that fascinating.
There's an uncanny valley, and I'm using that word because I don't know. I feel like it's kind of an analogous to this, where like with like the Canyons, it's like, this is weird. And the acting feels bad.
And it's all stunt
casting. But I don't know if
it's all stunt casting.
And I think Gus Van Sant is in it too. Weirdly. Right. But it's like, but I don't know if this bad acting is a choice.
Right.
Or these actors are bad. And that's what I mean by uncanny valley. It's like you fall into this confusion of like, I'm not sure if this is stilted because that's the way it's supposed to be, or they're bad.
There's a little bit of that in Patty Hearst. Because it's like.
So maybe that was Paul Schrader.
I mean, it's stunt casting, right? Because she was, like, really at the nadir of her problems.
Yeah.
And the other guy's a porn star.
Right.
And Gus Van Sant's a director.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's... Yeah. But, yeah. See, I would suggest...
And the whole thing with the Canyons was, like, the marketing, the tagline was, it ain't the hills. This is supposed to be like the dark underbelly of Beverly Hills.
Oh, I get it. Canyons. So it's the canyons.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's where the like the death of Hollywood kind of.
Interesting.
It's a weird.
Interesting.
It also feels like it's trying to do too much and say too much.
Sure, sure. As he's gotten older, things have gotten worse.
Yeah. And Bret Easton Ellis has also gotten way worse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or and maybe was maybe never that good actually. He's one of those.
I've never read any of his books.
Really? I went through a big phase in college, but like,
well, that's probably
that's when you go through.
That's when you do it, right?
High school and college.
Yeah.
Although I still do think The Rules of Attraction is a good movie.
You know, I loved it when but I haven't seen it in so long at this point.
I haven't either, but I haven't either. Maybe it's not. Maybe it doesn't hold up.
It might not. It might not, but I loved it at the time.
Yeah, so did
but,
I.
But I was young. Like, in college, you fall for things that are edgy and
it
shit.
It was super... Remember like, the end of the credits roll backwards?
Oh!
Yeah. yeah.
All right. So, if you were to see one, I would say see Affliction. That's a genuinely great movie.
Okay.
All right. We'll come back with Obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Mangione. I'm joined by Anthony Mangione. Anthony, this is Obsessions. This is the text to the media, the whatever, the pop culture. It could be a fucking burrito, whatever it is. It's the thing you're currently obsessed with. I have to ask you, because of current actions by you,
what
is yours a bummer or not? Because I want to no. I want to make sure that we do it in order.
I want to formally apologize for last time. I was in a weird headspace. I talked about AI, and I've gotten that out of my system. I'm really sorry.
It was all right. So do you want to go
those
first?
Those
faces
that you had
first?
Throughout the whole thing where you were like, what the fuck?
I let you go about? First, and then mine was like Abigail. It was like a scary
movie. No, mine's like fun.
All right. What's yours then?
Mine is the HBO Max original series Hacks.
Tell me about Hacks.
Okay.
People are telling me to watch
this
it.
This is a true obsession of mine.
Okay.
Like, I'm really into it. Like, I've
been, okay.
I'm in the, there's three seasons that have been released so far. It's been renewed for season four. I just started watching it.
It's been on for three seasons?
Yes,
already?
But I feel like it's just now getting, like,
yeah, just now people are talking about it.
Yeah, so season three just ended. I'm a few episodes away from the end of season three, and I'm, like, trying to savor it because I don't want it to end because then there's going to be, like, a year until we get to season four.
Sure.
So it is Jean Smart and Hannah Einbinder, who is a young comedic talent.
Okay.
Who just actually had a special released on HBO.
Uh-huh.
She's a very experimental, kind of weird stand-up.
What's her name?
Hannah Einbinder. She is she is the daughter of Lorraine Newman.
Okay.
Yeah. And she talks about that in the special.
Sure.
So she's like daughter of like comedy legend Lorraine Newman from the original SNL cast. But anyway, her stand-up...
Another nepo baby.
Yeah, I know. Her stand-up is like... I don't love her stand-up because it's kind of weird, but she's really good on the show.
What is the show about?
So it is... Sure. Okay, sorry. So it's Jean Smart. It's her. It is about two comics. One is like an old hack, and the other is like a young Gen Z progressive who got canceled. And they're both... canceled, I'll say.
Yeah.
That's the original situation in the pilot. They both kind of like need each other. So what happens is Jean Smart is kind of like a Joan Rivers type.
Okay.
She is a Vegas. She's got a Vegas residency.
Okay.
And she's been telling like the same jokes for 30 years. She hasn't updated her act in a really long time. Okay. It's got like, it's a little bit like Late Night. That Mindy Kaling wrote.
Yeah.
So she is being threatened that she's going to like lose her residency because like ticket sales are dwindling because she's not as relevant anymore.
Uh-huh.
And she's talking to her agent who's paid by Paul W. Downs, who's I think he's a showrunner and he's one of the creators with his wife. And Paul W. Downs is also the agent of Ava, who's the younger one who was just canceled for a tweet. Or whatever, and she's
what
coming
was the tweet that
it's she outed a Republican senator who was sending his son to like conversion camp, but she like made a joke, she like tweeted a joke about him, but then she like she got canceled for outing him. Anyway, she's like in his office complaining that like she can't get work because nobody wants to be anywhere near her. So basically he's like, what if like you two work together? So he like sets them up and he's like, you need a job. She needs like a new act that's like relevant. She needs like, go be her writer.
Okay.
So she goes to, she like flies from LA to Vegas and she meets her. And of course, like at the beginning, like they don't get along at all. But then eventually like she impresses Jean Smart with like how funny she is. So then Jean Smart's like, okay, you're hired. You start Monday or whatever. So then the show, basically for the first season, is like Ava helping Jean Smart like write a new act and like tap into like a more honest style of comedy. And then Jean Smart like kind of becoming like a mentor to Ava.
Okay.
But they eventually fall into a relationship that is very, they have great chemistry. It's very reminiscent of Jack Donaghy and Liz Lemon.
Okay.
Because a lot of the jokes are like Jean Smart's character, Deborah Vance, is like old and hacky, and she's like kind of like, she's like not woke and like Ava is. And a lot of the joke, a lot of the times it's like it comes back around and the joke is on Ava, where it's like she'll say something. Like there's one scene where she's reading an email that she wrote and she's, Jean Smart's character's like, read it for me, like word for word. And so she's like, hey guys, sorry for the use of the term guys. I know that it's gendered, but I always kind of assumed it was gender neutral. And then you see Jean Smart like roll her eyes and she's like, keep going, like making fun of her. So she's like the Jack Donaghy type, but then like as the show goes on, like she also gets more progressive because she learns from Ava, who works for her. So they've got a very interesting friendship that, like I said, develops into the—
Is it a funny show?
Yeah, it's hysterical. It develops into this like really great relationship between two women comedians from two very different generations.
Okay.
And then each season has kind of like an arc. And then this third season arc is about, it was mentioned earlier in season one that Jean Smart's character was almost the first woman in late night because she filmed like the first episode of a late night show and it just didn't get picked up. And so she's always wanted to be a late night host. And it's, the third season is about like her trying to get a late night job.
I can't believe it's been three seasons.
Yeah. It's—
where is it?
HBO. HBO Max. It's a Max original.
You're right. People, just now I'm hearing people talk about it.
It's
not just, I think, you. It's because, like, I've heard other people.
I think it's because season three was its strongest season. I mean, I think it's great from the beginning.
It's,
but
it's crazy that there's so much media that it's just like secret shows.
It, and it's like won a bunch of Emmys. And only, again, but only now it's like, I learned about it because I started seeing clips of it like on Instagram. And I was like, oh, this looks funny. Because a lot of the fun is like Deborah Vance like making fun of Ava. And like she like always like makes fun of her hair. And she always like, there's a running joke that she makes fun of her hands for being too big. And she's like, you can't make fun, you can't say things like that. You're my employer. And she's like, oh, come on. Jean Smart's great. Anyway, Caitlin Olson is also in it, and she's brilliant always. Caitlin Olson plays Jean Smart's daughter, like her adult daughter, who they have like a contentious relationship because her mother was like always on the road when she was growing up. I don't know. I feel like I'm not making it sound good, but it's really good.
I usually like things about comedy.
It's one of those rare shows, but I loved Mrs. Maisel, but like the stand up on Mrs. Maisel is like not great.
Hard to
watch.
It's
one of those rare shows about comedians where like when they show the stand up, even that's pretty funny.
Okay, yeah, because that's the problem with depicting stand up in TV and movies.
There's a great scene in the, I think it's the first or second
season.
Who
like makes this show? Like who's behind this?
Paul W. Downs and
Lucia.
His wife Lucia, whatever her name is.
What the fuck did Paul W. Downs do?
He was in Broad City. He's the guy from the gym on Broad City. You've seen him. He's all over the place.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Okay.
There's a really great scene that I'm just going to spoil because whatever.
Sure.
In the first season where, she's like, if I'm going to work out new material, I've got to take it on the road. So like a lot of the first season is them like going to like slummy little comedy clubs so she could work out new material. And she's at this, but like she's this big legend. So like everybody knows who she is because she's famous. And there's this one scene where this like really shitty man comedian like introduces her, but like makes a joke about her being old or something. So then she's like, You know, like, you, it's the moment where she, you see her start like leaning in and like going off script and like being honest and raw on stage.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, my whole career, there's always been guys like you, like comedy guys, and you're so funny and it's so easy to like make fun of a woman. And she's like, but you know what? I'm rich. So you know what I'm going to do? She's like, I'm going to give you $1 million if you promise to never do comedy ever again. And then she gets like the whole audience on her side, and he's like, you're fucking with me. And she's like, no, I'm really rich. Like, I will write you a check right now for $1 million if you promise to never, ever do comedy again. And he takes it.
That's
incredible. And then the audience like goes nuts. It's great. That's a great scene.
That's awesome.
It's a lot of it is about like how hard it was for her to be a woman.
Sure.
In comedy.
I'm sure. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to check this out because I love stand up and the art of stand up and things about stand up. You're right. I did find Miss Maisel rough.
Miss Maisel's an adorable show, and it's great and charming in that Gilmore Girls way, but the stand-up is not very good.
Yeah.
Because it's like every joke is like joke, and the audience is like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, it's so rough.
Yeah.
It's rough. And I'm a Gilmore Girls fan, and so is Jen very much. And we tried to watch it. We were like,
Yeah. I get that. I liked it, but I get that.
Okay. Okay. I actually will try that. That's on the Home Box Office?
The Home Box Office. Is that it's a real quick...
That's similar to Max?
It's on Max. Yeah. It's a real quick... I think each season is like 8 episodes. It's like really... I've watched like the 3 seasons.
30
minutes. In like a week. Yeah, they're all half hour.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like something you could pop out.
And I think... I feel like Jen would like it too.
I have to finish the Bear season 3 though.
Okay, so do that.
What's your deal? You don't like you don't want to be part of fun. You don't.
I do want to be part of fun. I know that it's very good. I just have not watched it yet. I'll get there.
You know they're right. The people are right. It is very good.
The thing is, when too many people tell me to watch something, I can't.
I get that, but I didn't go. I wasn't there at the beginning. I was there in the hype, and I was just like, let me just watch one episode.
Yeah. And it's great, yeah. I know it's great. I'm just so tired of everything being the best thing on television.
Right.
And I've been... It's like I have a ceiling of like once the third person tells me it's the best show on television...
It's not the best show on television. I won't watch. It's just very good, and it's got an interesting combination of comedy, really intense like drama, like just crazy people, mm-hmm. and then the most beautiful, immaculate food porn. Like the way it takes... depicts like the restaurant and the food and all that shit is like with such care mm-hmm. and like so real, like that element alone is fascinating, but then on top of it is this crazy, all these crazy people.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Hot Rod in Summer,
Mike. Oh right, because we're calling them mice. Hot Rodent men. Yeah, that seems
there's like a whole
that like seems a, like a thing we shouldn't do.
A whole group of men that somewhat resemble rodents, I guess, that are hot.
It just feels like that's wrong.
Listen, if it's about men, nobody cares.
Yeah, you're right. All right, so I also have a streaming show that I I'm obsessed with. It's an animated series called Blue Eye Samurai. It is it was created by Michael Green and Amber Noizumi. It does this thing where it's like it's during Edo period Japan, so mm-hmm. like there are samurais and stuff, but it's
I'm like ignorant to this. Is that like medieval period
Edo? I don't know the exact like years it would be. Like I don't know like what was going on in Europe while that's happening.
So you just call me a racist?
No, I didn't. I don't know
what was going on in Europe.
I'm a racist time. For not knowing. It's a period between 1603 and 1863.
Oh, no. Okay.
There was still a shogun who was controlling things. All right. So in the show, you know, at this point, white people aren't allowed there. So if you are half white, you're considered like below human. And it's called Blue Eye Samurai because the lead character is a female samurai who hides her gender and acts as a man mm-hmm. and also wears glasses to hide her blue eyes.
Is she part white?
Yes, she's half white. Okay. And there are four men that were... There were four white men in Japan when she was conceived, and she doesn't know which one is her father, but she's on a quest to kill all four of them.
Oh, so it's like Mamma Mia, but she wants to kill them.
Yes, exactly. Or it's like it's like Kill Bill.
Yeah, I was gonna say Kill Bill actually.
And it's got but it's just like people. It's an adult animation. Like there's nudity in it. There's sex in it. Mm-hmm. There's strong language in it. There's crazy violence in it. Kenneth Branagh is the bad guy in
season one. He's so good.
He plays this Irish, this white Irish guy who might or might not be her father, and he is rich because he sneaks guns into Japan.
Is it live action or is it animated?
Animated.
I thought you said it was animated. So he's the voice.
He's the voice. Okay. And he does a great job. Actually, the main character
is is this translated?
No, it's
American.
Yeah, it's American production.
Okay.
The main character, Mizu, is actually voiced by Maya Erskine from...
Oh, really? And she was
in that... But it's not a comedic performance at all.
Oh, she was in that Mr. and Mrs. Smith reboot,
too. Yeah. She does a great job, but it's not a comedic performance. I think there's 8 episodes in season... one, and this came out last year. It came out in 2023. Yeah, there's 8 episodes. It's just really good. It's got incredible action, incredible scenes. The animation is absolutely beautiful. The voice acting, it's just really, really good writing. And it's just cool. It's funny. There is a scene where she's like learning to use her samurai sword, and you hear that song from Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun. And when it first came on, I rolled my eyes and I was like, But then I remembered I'm old and that movie's over 20 years old. So it's not a ripoff or
it's an homage.
It's moved out of ripoff / parody into genuine homage, right? Some kid is going to watch this show and love it and then look that up and then find out that was from a movie called Kill Bill and be like, I got to see that now. So I forgave that. But everything else was...
What was that other song from Kill Bill? The
do-do-do-do-do. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. I couldn't believe when I found out Maya was the voice.
Yeah, wow.
It's just super cool. It's just super good. I know fans of PCMC like Love, Death, and Robots. Mm-hmm. If you like that, I think you'll like Blue Eye Samurai.
That sounds cool. Do you think I'd like it? Be honest.
No. I think you would like... I think you'd appreciate the animation. I don't think maybe I'm talking out of turn, but I don't think you like action, right?
Not really.
Right? So you wouldn't be thrilled by cool sword fighting and dying, killing people with swords and stuff.
Not really.
So you wouldn't, it's not for you, but it's good.
But I appreciate that it's out there.
I'm glad. All right. This has been PCMC. We come to you every single Wednesday. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me yet again.
You're welcome. We end every episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.